Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Politically Speaking. I am the one third of the co-hosts, Erica Sampson. We have the one for Kirsten Pruitt. And then today is a special episode one because it is the 10th episode. We made it in the double digits, y'all. So excited. I feel like it's like when you're fresh out of fifth grade, about to go to middle school, you know, like, okay, got my cap and gown on, moving up. But yeah, so officially welcome everyone to the 10th episode of Politically Speaking. We have a lot to talk about today, but not only that, we have some wonderful co-hosts and some guests that will be joining us today. Starting off, we have the wonderful Anderson Clayton. We give a round of applause. What's up, what's up? What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome, Anderson. Glad to have you. So listen, let me just give you a proper introduction. So today we are honored to have with us Anderson Clayton, the chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party, one of the most aspiring young political leaders in the country. At just 25 years old, Anderson made history as the youngest state party chair in the United States, bringing fresh energy and that strategic vision focused on revitalizing the Democratic Party across North Carolina. Welcome, welcome, Anderson.
Thank y'all so much for having me. And thank you, Erica, for the introduction. I'm so excited to be on with y'all.
Yes. Listen, give us a tea. What's going on in North Carolina? See, I'm born and raised in North Carolina. So I knew we had a special connection by default. But give us a tea. What's going on in North Carolina political spectrum? What's going on?
I mean, shit's kind of crazy right now in North Carolina. And I think that folks can see that whether you're following Trump's Department of Justice coming in and suing our state board of elections to try to purge over 100,000 voters from the rolls in the state. Or if you're looking at VA cuts that are happening across North Carolina from the federal cuts that Trump's administration has put in through DOGE. I mean, we just did a town hall this last weekend with veterans from across North Carolina who were just deeply concerned, honestly, about what's going to happen to their benefits, whether or not the VA is going to be able to complete the access that they've already offered to veterans right now throughout the state. And then the other thing that I think that we're seeing most of is just people concerned about their health care. I was talking to a woman today whose husband has Alzheimer's right now. And she said, you know, I don't know what's about to happen to his health insurance because of Medicaid cuts that are coming from the big bad bill that happened and passed through Congress from reconciliation with the budget. And I think that everybody is just in a big stage of wonder and also confusion. And that's where Republicans, I think, thrive, to be honest with y'all. And so that is sort of the game plan that they're laying out right now in the state. And what we're trying to do is fight back against it. So North Carolina Dems launched a voter registration repair program. We are right now trying to educate voters about the fact that their votes are being challenged. And we've contacted and called about 70,000 people that are on the 113,000 person list that we've got so far. And it's been a work in progress. And so we're hoping that people are going to want to join us in the effort because a lot of people, these calls are friendly. Folks have no idea that their votes are going to be challenged or that their voter registrations need to be repaired. And so it's a really easy way to help people engage with politics for the first time. I'm just like, hey, let your neighbors know if their voter registration needs to be fixed right now in the state of North Carolina, because they may not know it.
Absolutely. Do you feel that there is a good turnout in the state? Like, as far as like youth or older people, middle age, anything like that, do you think people are active and involved?
I think that more people have woken up. You know, I tell people often, we didn't lose the 2024 election to Donald Trump. We lost it to the couch as a party and people that did not feel motivated or inspired to turn out to vote. And I think that that is everybody's responsibility to look in the mirror and say, well, what was my part to play in that? And what didn't I do to help people feel empowered in this party and the opportunity to have their voices heard? And so for me, it's been trying to make sure that we're helping anybody who wants to run for office this year. The thing that I have seen, so I came into this role in 2023, and 2024 was really hard to recruit candidates to run for office for both state legislature and congressional offices because this state is gerrymandered, right? Like, we have a Republican Party right now in the state legislature that has handpicked their voters and chosen their districts, drawn them for themselves. And they had a Republican court of appeals and also Supreme Court that came in and backed up their maps and said, oh, that's completely legal, even though partisan and racial gerrymandering should not be legal in the state of North Carolina. And yet we find ourselves in that, right? But it's been the case, I think, of where right now I have got there's a Democrat running in every congressional district that we have. We're filling state legislative seats earlier than we ever did. We have 1,100 Democrats that are running for municipal offices this year across the state. So more Democrats signed up to run for local office than Republicans had. And I think that shows an energy. And a lot of those people are young folks. A lot of those people are new people to politics. They're folks that are like, I'm fed the fuck up and I'm tired of whoever's in charge right now not giving me what I need and also not taking care of the communities that they're supposed to represent.
Absolutely. I'm a stickler on you can't complain about the results if you're not being active in changing those results. Like, you can't just complain about the way things are, but you're not even registered to vote to change the way that things are, you know what I'm saying? So I'm glad that your state is, like, getting involved. I'm glad that I really want everyone to get involved, obviously, but I feel like the southern states, come on, y'all got to come on out, man. Like, I need y'all to do something. It is so hard.
Yeah. And I really love that you said, you know, young people are stepping up to run for office, because something that has really inspired me with the work that you're doing is the effort you're putting into reaching out to young voters and rural voters, which are two groups we really need. So I love that you have really focused on that. And so excited to see what you're doing in North Carolina.
Well, it's funny. People looked at me when I got this job and they said, okay, when do you move to Raleigh? And I was like, no, like I'm going to live in Roxboro and do this job. And I'm going to go home every day in Person County and touch grass because being in a blue bubble sometimes in the state, I think doesn't allow for people to understand, like, North Carolina has the second highest rural population of any other state in the country right now. When you look at the fact that we're not a Michigan where you've got Detroit with your major metro areas, or Virginia, where you have maybe Nova and then also like Fairfax, right? That's got huge populations. We're not a Georgia, honestly, with Atlanta and the ability for that to be a lot of our areas because of the density of our history, right? And agribusiness and also manufacturing means that we've got a lot of small communities across the state that still have huge population centers in them. And I'm not telling y'all anything that y'all don't know about being here. And Erica, you know the state well too, right? Of just like, it is something where I think a long time ago, our party sort of forgot where our base was. And it used to be like rural working class people in a lot of ways. And yes, some of those are Dixiecrats before anybody is like, Anderson, I'm like, nah, get it. Like, some of these people are not on our side anymore. But like, a lot of these folks want to meet a candidate. They want someone to come out there and shake their hand and respect the fact that like their communities still matter. And I don't think that's much to ask for from our party right now. You know, like, we're willing to do it everywhere else. Why would we not be willing to do it in rural communities?
Exactly. Because period. All right. So let's go ahead and hop into our first topic, since we are talking about, you know, topic of youth and all of that stuff and making changes. I do want to talk about something that is heavy, but nonetheless, it is surrounding the topic of gun violence. So I always feel like there is always a time to talk about advocating for gun violence. So we're going to go ahead and hop into that and talk about the most recent school shooting recap in Minnesota. So these are things that we do know for anybody that's the first time listening. So what happened was, on the morning of August 27th, during a school-wide mass at Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis, a 23-year-old former student, Robin Westman, opened fire through the Catholic school stained glass windows. The attack left two children dead, an 8-year-old Fletcher Merkel and a 10-year-old Harper Majowski. Don't kill me. Sorry, y'all. But nonetheless, 21 others injured. Like, my gosh, including 18 children and 3 elderly parishioners. And then the extra layer of this is like the weapon of choice, you know what I'm saying? It was the fact that he had an AR-15 rifle, a shotgun, and a pistol. I only own like a pepper spray. I'm just like so confused. Like, how is like the access? Am I tripping? Is it that easy to like even get this? I know in South Carolina, there's been a lot of controversy around ownership and how you even apply for guns and how people are just somehow backdoor getting approved and things like that. But I did want to open the floor about discussion, because as I was like listening to this story, obviously, very, very terrible story, but everything is starting to sound the same. Like, I'm starting to not be able to keep up between one story over the other because of the repetitives of how much this is becoming a norm in America. And like, now it's like to the point where I don't even, I feel some type of way when people want to give condolences. Like if I was the parent, that would probably irk me. You know what I'm saying? Like, what am I going to do with that? Like, I need laws. I need policies. Like, if you really want to help me, that's how you help me. Condolences, great. I you know what I'm saying? But it's just like, no, I need something more than that. But I definitely want to hear how you guys feel about, you know, gun violence in America. Like, what does this latest tragedy reveal about where we are as a country on school safety?
I mean, you have to think about it. Like, Minnesota was also the place where you had a month ago a political assassination happen where Representative Melissa Hartman was shot at her doorstep. And I think that city has already, and that state has already gone through so much with the political violence incurred, partly due, right, to a Trump administration rhetoric. Like, the person that came in and did that was an anti-abortion advocate who had a hit list, right, of every legislator across Minnesota and also even targeting their governor, right, with that. And I just think that what we're seeing is a lot of frustration. We were at the DNC meeting in Minneapolis, actually, when that happened, and they stopped the DNC meeting and adjourned it for the day because everybody was just in tears, honestly, about what had just happened that morning. But I think what we're seeing right now is the craving, right, of people to actually take what folks are saying on the ground seriously. And I don't think we're seeing that. We're not in North Carolina, where you have Republicans in the state legislature that are about to override potentially Senate Bill 50, which would have been the ability for folks to carry a concealed carry, like permitless concealed carry in the state of North Carolina, right? Josh Stein vetoed that bill, and everybody, including Republican sheriffs out of Nash County and even in other places across the state, have come out against repealing the governor's veto over that, because they're like more guns in the streets, and especially the access to do that in a concealed way is not safety. It's just going to put more harm or more people in harm's way. And North Carolina, according to the Fraternal Order of the Police, more police officers were shot in the line of duty last year than in any other year in this state's history. Wow. And so if you care about one side of this, if you're somebody that says right now, just to be honest with y'all, you're like, back the blue. And I'm like, okay, so back the blue. Like, right. Let's put gun violence into a factual picture where you can say we're ready to help people that want to or that are protecting our communities right now. And I think that is something where Republicans need to shut up and show up, to be real with you, with the actions that they're taking.
Exactly. And I feel like I heard on the news, I can't remember the number, but I feel like they said that there has been like 44 or 54 like school shootings so far this year. And I'm like, my gosh, like, we're only halfway in the year. How is that even possible? Like, that is such a high number. And like, and again, we're only halfway through the year. So my mouth is just like on the floor, because, again, it's like I feel like some conversations should just be nonpartisan. Like, we should all be on the same page about when it comes to gun violence, like any form of it, how we're going to be proactive, how we're going to make changes. Like, a bullet does not care about your race. It does not care about your background. It does not care about your culture. It does not care about it don't care about your name. It don't care if you miss a bill, like nothing. Like, these are things that we should need to all collectively be getting proactive about, because one of the episodes I mentioned how we have like a saying, like, it means so much being able to make it home. But now people are getting shot in their home. Like, your home is supposed to be your safe space, and now it's not even safe. Like, people just getting that comfortable where they just coming up to your house and like doing like crazy things. But I feel like I don't know what is going to take to like stir the pot and like put a fire and urgency on the topic of gun violence and stuff. And the fact that it's happening to the youth school settings, and still there's no active like changes to that. And it's like, man, it's like, I don't know. It's just a terrible, terrible situation. But yeah, that's my thought on that. Let's go ahead. And we actually have another guest. So I definitely want to go ahead and get ready to bring him in. Kirsten, can you give him his introduction?
Sure. I would love to. So, very excited to welcome a good friend of the pod as our guest tonight, Michael Layer. I met Michael, and maybe Erica did too, through our work with the Young Democrats of South Carolina, where he was second vice president at one point. He's been a field organizer, canvasser, and data director for campaigns in South Carolina for several years. He played a huge part in our co-host Emily's election in 2024. And beyond Michael's work in politics, he's a great friend who always shows up for you, and we're so honored to have him as a guest with us tonight. So welcome, Michael.
So happy to be here. It's so amazing seeing everybody and being in such great company tonight.
Welcome, Michael. Glad to have you.
All right. So on to our next topic. And it's a doozy. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, has been destroying public health in America since he took office. Last week, after serving only 29 days as director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, Susan Manares, was ousted. She was ousted because of her unwillingness to pre-approve the recommendations of a vaccine advisory panel filled with people who have expressed anti-vaccine sentiment. She wanted to know what their recommendations were going to be, and she wanted to make sure the recommendations had been rigorously and scientifically reviewed. What she wanted was to protect public health over serving a political agenda. And that's what the CDC really should be about, using unbiased scientific reasoning to make decisions that impact the health of Americans. After Manares was fired, at least four top officials at the CDC resigned, with more expected to come. This week, nine previous directors or acting directors of the CDC penned a guest essay in the New York Times titled "Kennedy's Endangering Every American's Health." In it, they discuss how RFK Jr. has fired thousands of federal workers and severely weakened programs to protect Americans from cancer, heart attacks, strokes, lead poisoning, injury, violence, and more. Amid the largest measles outbreak in the U.S. in a generation, RFK has focused on downplaying vaccines and touting unproven treatments. He's replaced experts on federal health advisory committees with unqualified individuals who share his unscientific views. Now he's limited who can receive the new COVID vaccines to only those 65 and older, or those who are at high risk for severe disease. The vaccine was previously available to those 6 months of age and older. Creating vaccine distrust and hesitancy in America has disastrous consequences. One of which was when, speaking of gun violence, a gunman opened fire at the CDC on August 8th, which led to the death of a police officer. More than 500 shell casings were recovered at the scene, and more than 180 rounds struck CDC campus buildings. Investigators found documents in which the gunman indicates his actions were driven by vaccine mistrust. Now, Florida plans to become the first state to end all vaccine mandates, including for school children. Public health experts for decades have credited school vaccine mandates with limiting the spread of infectious diseases. Meanwhile, the governors of California, Oregon, and Washington have formed the West Coast Health Alliance to issue their own guidelines around vaccines, which are driven by evidence-based recommendations from national medical organizations. So, a lot going on. Definitely not a good place for public health in America to be. It's also impacting around the world too. So, what are y'all's thoughts on this mess?
It's you using unqualified and unscientific in the same sentence that is sending me, because it's like, exactly. It's like, you told, what do I think? I feel like people in Florida need to move. If you're in Florida right now, try another state. Like, because Florida's got a lot going on and I can't keep up. Like, between, Alcatraz, between all that other stuff going on in Florida.
Well.
And like, now this
is right.
Like, there's too much going on in that panhandle. And then you got the daggone, I forgot his name. He is operating. And it's like, my gosh. You know what also bothered me? Was that I forgot the guy's name, but the surgeon or whatever he was, it was the black guy that is like the face of talking about bringing or removing the mandate for the vaccines in the school. And as someone who is black, I felt some type of way watching him be the face and the mouthpiece. I was like, sir, like, what is going on? Like, no. Like, and then the fact that I'm that type of person, if I get a sniffle, I'm on Google trying to figure out what's going on. So, no. put the CDC people back in their jobs because otherwise it's going to be me and Google going down a rabbit hole trying to figure out what is wrong with me. And I just feel
no, with MDs, I think everybody's got cancer, right? Everybody's going to be like, oh my God, I'm dying tomorrow.
That's a lie. No, put the people back in their seats and stuff like that. And then also, I don't feel comfortable when he's removing the professionals. Like, these people went to school. They chose to be in this career field. And then you want to have, like what, a Walmart greeter? Like, do the role or something? Like, I'm so confused. Yeah. Like we got, there's levels to that. But yeah, that's just my little opinion about it.
I think a lot about things that were already said, that Republicans thrive when people can be divided over certain political issues. Again, not trusting longstanding institutions that are not only evidence driven, but are often like not super political, but by politicizing them, they are able to get that political support. In support of the individual kind of over the collective, which I think is really dangerous too. I was looking into things about how like organ donation is seen as being very nonpartisan. It's like not, it's like a political, like not a hot potato, right? You check the box, you're going to support other people. I would argue it's more invasive than getting a vaccine. But getting a vaccine is more, political, and people have different reservations about that than getting, donating organs to the next person. And I just really hate it. And, don't know if that is like a manufactured kind of culture war that they knew that Republicans would be popular on this or popular on trying to take people away from, different existing groups. But I ultimately think it's bad for society. Ultimately people will get hurt because of this. Mm-hmm. And that also sucks.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Anderson. No, I was just like North Carolina in the chat always right now being like, yeah, and if Tom Tillis hadn't been the confirming vote on RFK Jr., we wouldn't be here at all. And I'm like, that is also why the man cannot run for the U.S. Senate again, in my opinion, is because people across, to Michael's point, people across this country do not agree with what's happening right now with the CDC or with Health and Human Services across the country, and also especially NIH funding being cut, right? Like, everywhere that you're looking at for the resources that are supposed to be there for folks that with life's or life-threatening illnesses that need that support are not going to get it anymore. And for me, that's it would have been the big point against, to me, Tom Tillis, if we were still running against him. Now we're running against a political hack named Michael Whatley, right? Who also, to me, is an oil lobbyist and somebody that's not going to represent North Carolina either very well. But these folks are bought and paid for by corporations and are in their pockets. And that's something that RFK, I think, knows a little too much about, to be honest with y'all.
Wasn't RFK the guy who put the bear in the park or something like that? I feel like he did something to a bear.
He killed a bear and dumped it in Central Park.
It's like, what in the world?
Whale on top of the car. Like really, what? Really That's sick stuff with these animals.
And then he is in these positions of power. And then I remember when someone asked him about vaccines or getting in, he was like saying that no one should take the advice from him or something like that. I'm like, sir, you're in this role. That's like what we were at you for advice. Like, I'm so confused. Again, he wants us to go to Google and go down a rabbit hole. That's his advice. But I'm like, what? You are in a role where people are going to look to you for guidance, look to you for advice. And that's what you're saying. It's like, again, how are these people in these positions of power to be making these like decisions, not just for their household, but for all like households and stuff like that. And then the fact that he's like saying that it's like, he's supporting to mandate, and it's like, no, it should be an option to each his own. However they want to choose, to get the vaccines. Or not a lot of people chose to get the COVID shot. I was the person that was, going after him like, well, you didn't get it. No, it's your choice. If you don't want to get it, that's on you. However, I'm going to get it because, again, that was my choice. But I feel like that is what how it should be because it's their own body. So it should be their own choices. But these people is wild. These people is wild, man.
So this just in about the bear. Apparently, RFK wanted to take the bear home, but he had dinner plans and a flight. So he staged the bear's death in Central Park.
Again, we're taking advice.
Oh, and he initially intended to skin it and refrigerate the meat for his own consumption, according to his own confession. He decided against this plan, however, and dumped the dead bear cub in Central Park to appear as though it had been hit by a bicycle, reports NPR and CNN.
And was it, what does it, so I don't know if he was up. A teenager or if he was like a full adult.
No, I'm pretty sure he was a full adult.
Okay, so it's again, we're going back to
full adult.
My point. Like,
definitely, yep.
Like, she probably did that like 2 days ago. So's wrong with that man. Like,
this vaccine hesitancy. I work at a nursing school, and all of our students, when they come in, they have to have these different, like, they have to show proof of immunity to MMR, varicella, hepatitis B, and if they don't show immunity on a blood test, they have to get a booster vaccine. And those are our requirements. And we've had to start, I've been in my job for 4.5 years. And at the beginning, we didn't have to do this. But now we have to tell people that if you show you're not immune, you have to get that booster and you refuse, like, you may as well just walk out the door now. Like, during orientation, my boss literally says that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like he never had to make those statements before because we just knew, you know, people, if they didn't show immunity, they'd get the vaccine. And and it's so concerning to me because these people are going to work in healthcare as nurses. And hardly any of my students have gotten the COVID vaccine. And it's just unfortunate. And we lost students during the pandemic because they wouldn't get the vaccine. And at one point, it was a hard stop for them. Like, if you don't do this, you can't continue in the nursing. And they just chose not to become nurses. And I'm like, that is a huge, I don't get it, but.
No, I think you bring up a good point with, like, how severe misinformation and disinformation had to have been, right? And still has to be about something like that for folks to be able to say, I'm going to change my entire career trajectory or what I've wanted to do my entire life then because of it. And I think that's what we're up against, in my opinion, like, going forward. And in so many cases, I think that the party, the Democratic Party, right, has sort of laughed at how Republicans have managed to concoct a media ecosystem and apparatus that has propelled that misinformation, disinformation. And it's like, we are just now getting on the page of, actually, the internet's important and, like, social media matters. And that's how, like, majority of young people get their information. And it's become a shift in the party that you've seen, like, severely, right? But it is a place to me where we have, how are you going to make up for what they have done in 40 years over the next 4? And I think that our party has got a big question to answer when it comes to that, because it is scary when you think about people that were willing to do that and willing to give up everything they thought they wanted in life because of they didn't want to have a vaccine. I also, though, Eric, I think you make a good point, too, because I always said this about the way that we framed the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine, of especially in rural communities, right? Being forced to do something was not... It was not palatable for people. They were like, you're not going to tell me what the fuck to do, to be real with you. And I think especially, like, at the government right now and and right then as well, right? But the way that I think we could have framed that was, like, take care of your neighbor, get the COVID vaccine. Like, the ability to have a way to show people, like, this was about a community effort and building up support for us versus, like, we're the big bad boys coming in and telling you how to do something or how to live your life or, like, what your community is about to go through, because people did feel the effects of it. But you had coroners in places that lied, right, about hospital records, that lied about, like, what caused certain deaths. Like, no one actually knows how many people, like, they've got estimates, right? But
right.
we are never going to have an accurate number about how many people we lost from that 2 to 4 year span right there that we still currently exist in, to be honest with y'all, right? People are still being infected with COVID-19 to this day. Like, it hasn't gone.
There's an outbreak in upstate South Carolina right now, so yeah.
I don't know if y'all remember, but there was a moment early on where it was very, both Republicans and Democrats were like, get the vaccine. If you are an elderly person, you need to be first in line. That was, I remember going through a lot of state house Republicans being like, get the vaccine. It's really important, actually. Oh my gosh, go do it.
Donald Trump made the vaccine. Like, what are we forgetting? That's right. Sometimes I look at people and I'm like, your president, right, made this shit. You should want it, actually. Like, he had to go and get one in his arm because people were like, we don't believe that you're actually going to take it yourself. Like, that's what's crazy to me about this sometimes, to be honest with y'all.
Mm-hmm. And he was advocating people to get the vaccine for measles. So I'm like, what? He out of his mouth telling people, go get that shot so you don't get measles. And then look at him now. But Michael, you were saying something. Go ahead, babe.
No. I think it's also like the tail wagging the dog in that situation, too, because like what happened were like individual crybabies saying, this is too hard for me. I need to go out. I need to go yell at people. I need to go protest. I need to have the big trucker caravan. And I think Republicans saw that and were like, oh, that's where I can get easy support. Actually, this thing that would save your life, that would save, you know, our elderly voters' lives, our get us back to normal quicker. Actually, that's all, you know, Fauci's fault. It's actually all Joe Biden's fault, even though, you know, he wouldn't be president yet. it's all somebody else's fault. I was here saying we should have done something more. We now have like our education officials saying like, oh, we lost so much education opportunities during that time. Therefore, we can never have these kinds of measures. We can never have public safety efforts going towards the next thing because of this, you know, unfortunate circumstance.
Right. RFK.
So I get really frustrated with that too. Again, not having leaders that know what they're doing, but are often looking for the next thing and how can I get more attention? I can get more attention by appealing to these people rather than being a smart and responsible leader, you know, in our society. And I now want to talk about, there was a hearing today. And it's very funny that you mentioned Tom Tillis. He's a big figure today. Like Kirsten said, there was a big hearing where they brought the Health and Human Services Secretary, Robert Kennedy Jr., to come talk to the Senate. I want to paint a picture of kind of like what led to this moment. And I want to talk about how a large section of the support in the Republican Party and the electorate that helped get Donald Trump elected are believers in conspiracy theories. These are not people who just like have different political opinions based on you and I, but loudly and proudly believe in things that are not true or based on any kind of like accurate understanding of the world. A poll was taken in late 2024 that found 19% of all Americans, nearly 1 in 5 Americans, are believers in the QAnon conspiracy in 2024. Among Republicans, that number goes up to 28%. And among people who watch conservative news other than Fox News, that number goes up to 45%. There's a post, or there's a commentator on CNN, Harry Enten. I don't know if y'all are familiar with him. But basically, he used this poll to say that because this is such a huge part of the Republican electorate, Donald Trump would not have gotten elected in 2024 without their support. Bringing into this, Anderson, we have a Winthrop poll. We have a Winthrop University that does a poll of these are residents of South Carolina that found nearly 2/3 of Republicans in South Carolina still believe there's significant voter fraud that impacted the 2020 election. And so when we're talking about vaccines, I want to talk about how where do these belief systems come from? And sometimes people think that like people make their own decision on, you know, whatever, and then they find whatever politician to support. But actually, that is in reverse in a lot of ways. There's a book called What's the Matter with Kansas? They talk about a study where they find those different they talk about different people's attitudes about like cuts for Medicare, for example. And it is often people taking cues from people that they respect, people they look up to, especially people in politics. And then they change their beliefs and attitudes based on the information that they get from these people. In the last 3 years, the amount of Republican parents who say that they've either delayed or skipped vaccinating their kids has doubled, according to a January poll. In that same poll from the Kaiser Family Foundation, less than half of Republicans trust major institutions like the CDC, the FDA, or the HHS, but over 80% of them say that they trust Dr. Oz, RFK, and Donald Trump to make recommendations about their own health. What do these people say? These are things that I want to take my personal health decisions based on. There are, you know, horrible statistics that Kirsten mentioned, that one of the most contagious diseases on earth, measles, that was nearly eradicated in 2000, now has 1,400 cases in the United States, with the majority of them in areas with very low vaccination rates. And so bringing us to today, or to our new Health and Human Services Secretary, RFK was confirmed by the Senate by kind of party lines. There were some controversial votes at the time. There were some controversial votes at the time, including Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins from Maine, Tom Tillis from North Carolina, who is not seeking re-election. And if you're in North Carolina, you should vote for Roy Cooper. Joni Ernst from Iowa, who's also not running. John Bassaro from Wyoming. He is a doctor, as well as Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, who's also a doctor. And at the time, people were really people were talking to Bill Cassidy, seemingly being one of the reasonable people that we theoretically should talk to about, hey, you really believe in vaccines. You really think these will be good for people. But Bill Cassidy ultimately supported RFK during his confirmation, because at the time he said that he got assurances saying that Robert Kennedy Jr. would not sow distrust or damage the availability of vaccine. Project 2025 has an entire section about repealing parts of the Inflation Reduction Act that make vaccines free or reduce cost. Mm-hmm. RFK was brought to the Senate today to face questions from senators.
As he should.
We have previously seen the party lens be put on these kinds of hearings. But today, it seemed like it was a bipartisan group of folks that had a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. They spoke for about 3 hours. I unfortunately was at work, so I didn't, watch all 3 hours, but I did some research on that. Senators from Oregon said that he should be, fired and removed. They were asked about the about firing the Susan Moronet, Monterez. I'm so sorry. The former director.
It's a tough one.
I'm so sorry.
No.
Who wrote a Wall Street Journal article basically saying that RFK Jr. Sorry. So RFK Jr. fired this panel of vaccine experts and tried to replace them with his own advisors. And that panel is supposed to meet at a regular time. But Susan says that she fired him Susan says that he fired her because he asked her to approve different vaccine or approve different positions that she did not believe in, number one, but also that the committee hadn't even met to discuss. I want to show some clips from today. From, I believe this is Elizabeth Warren, who has some questions about
Atlanta's girl.
Mm-hmm. Kind of about this whole this whole saga, right? Dr. Susan had to be also confirmed by the Senate. And at the time, this was Democrats are voting no to not advance any kind of nominee. And so all the Democrats did vote no, but she advanced on 51-49 to take this position. And so this is a question that Elizabeth Warren is asking RFK, kind of about a pretty big change.
I'm sorry, but this is not what she has said publicly. She has said
I'm not surprised about that.
So you're saying she's lying?
Yes. Every conversation I had with her, there were witnesses.
Let me get this straight. This is the same person that less than a month earlier, you stood next to her and described her as unimpeachable, and you had full confidence in her, and that you had full confidence in her scientific credentials. And in a month, she became a liar?
Yeah, you should ask her what changed. And by the way, a month ago, you were voting against her. Oh, because you thought she was either incompetent, ineligible, or unsuited to the task.
I voted against her because I was afraid she was going to bend the knee to you and Donald Trump. And it looks like he didn't bend the knee, so you fired her. Look, you're putting America's babies' health at risk, America's seniors' health at risk, all Americans' health at risk, and you should resign.
Senator Sanders.
Hell yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. Call him out.
So I just hope that I never get elected to the United States Senate so that I don't ever have to answer hard questions from Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, no, I want to answer hard questions from Elizabeth Warren all day, every
day.
Not
me.
I will be thrilled.
There were large parts of the hearing that were about the firing, that were also about, his positions on vaccines, the things that the CDC is recommending or not recommending. This may be very frustrating to listen to, but they're often defenses that he has. I didn't say that. Oh, I don't know what the position is. I don't know what the data is. Oh, you're asking me, how many people died of whatever? I don't know. Oh, what kind of, efficacy does this have? I don't know. And so We are, oh, I don't have a clip of, I don't have a clip of Tillis, but I do have a clip from Republican from Wyoming. This is Barrasso, who is himself a doctor and is very pro vaccines. And so this is, again, somebody who voted for, this is a doctor who voted to confirm Robert F. Kennedy Jr., knowing everything kind of about him. This is one of the questions that kind of is about the measles outbreak. Again, shout out to ACYN on Twitter.
By protecting his troops from smallpox, Washington preserved the Continental Army, which allowed our nation to continue to fight for our independence. And like President Trump, I believe President Washington acted decisively to protect Americans' lives at a time of great national peril. So over the last 50 years, vaccines are estimated to have saved 154 million lives worldwide. I support vaccines. I'm a doctor. Vaccines work. Secretary Kennedy, in your confirmation hearings, you promised to uphold the highest standards for vaccines. Since then, I've grown deeply concerned. The public has seen measles outbreaks, leadership in the National Institute of Health questioning the use of mRNA vaccines, the recently confirmed director of Centers for Disease Control and Prevention fired. Americans don't know who to rely on. You know, recent polls said 89% of voters, 81% of Trump voters agree vaccine recommendations should come from trained physicians, scientists, public health experts. So, you know, they believe, you know, Senator Marshall, Senator Cassidy, they believe me when it comes to vaccines. If we're going to make America healthy again, we can't allow public health to be undermined.
RFK looks like someone who, like, he needs, like, he needs help putting on his shoes or something. Like, that's how much I don't trust him. He looks like incompetent. I don't know how else, what other word to use, but he's not someone that I would be like, hey, I need some advice. Can you help me out with this question? Especially anything under the umbrella of like health. Like, what? RFK is the last person I'm going to go to about any type of health concern, inquiries, anything health related. I have not taken advice from this man. Like, he has just showed me, like, his character and how he, his thought process. And it's like, he's all over the place. He is all over the place. Mm-hmm. Another, he's not even, like, qualified. That's the most, the biggest thing. Like, you are not qualified by any means. And then he is sitting there trying to give advice. Like, no one should take any advice from him.
But the thing is, we're not actually surprised, right? Like, we all knew RFK Jr. was going to be like this. What's wild to me watching that clip is that a Republican senator that voted for the man is now sitting up there being like, no, I believed in vaccines. And I'm like, no, you didn't. Not throughout this entire presidency, or else you would have been somebody speaking up in favor of them. You're doing it because it's politically convenient right now because you see polling numbers. Like, that is political play at its finest. And I'm like, that is what Republicans have built their entire careers on, is political theater. And I'm like, unless Democrats get in that same fucking zone, like, we are not going to meet them, like, meet the moment right now with where that's at. Because Elizabeth Warren did it. She was like, I didn't vote for him. I thought that they were going to be someone that bent the knee to you. And obviously they didn't. But it's like, we're sitting there truly listening to somebody that I'm like, I can't. And the average person who does not understand any of that, right, and does not know it, is going to be like, oh, well, here's a Republican that makes sense. And I'm like, no, the fuck he doesn't either. But here we are, you know?
Exactly.
No, I think it is really bad. Like, I think people talk about, like, Republicans as, like, a cult of personality, like, around Donald Trump. But, like, that is how they understand, like, politics, is through their people and, like, nobody else. I found it, so I wanted to share it too. That specific poll I was referencing on, like, who people trust and how different it is based on your politics. And so, like, people broadly support, like, their doctor. That's, like, a person in their community. But, like, any kind of institution, Republicans do not believe in their institutions, but they love their idols here. Like, they will take, the specific question is, like, a good amount of trust to make the right recommendations when it comes to health issues. So Michelle Obama, for example, saying, hey, we need healthier school, we need healthier meals in our schools, we need people eating healthier. That's partisan. That is the liberal agenda being shoved down your throat. But RFK saying that, oh, that's cool. That's totally understandable. And things that we need to make, you know, to improve America's health. I have another section about RFK Jr. does not know, even though he's in charge of this huge federal agency with a lot of like information, he does not have that information. Also, I want to touch on a big part of the questioning that was about funding from the big bad bill. What did you call it, Anderson?
You got it.
The big ugly bill?
Big bad bill. Something like that.
Okay. Okay. No, I think it's important to not use their words. So the bad.
I think I said big bad bill then.
Big bad bill. Yeah, big bad bill. So in the bill, it essentially takes away $150 billion worth of funding that would go to rural hospitals. And they took $150 billion away, but then they gave $50 billion through this other grant to rural hospitals. And so what they're claiming is that because I'm giving you this $50 and taking away $150, then... oh, this 50 is actually one of the largest investments in rural hospitals that we have. But we're actually losing a net $100 billion for our rural hospitals. In South Carolina, we are expected to close 7 hospitals in rural areas through this funding. And there was a big big argument about that in the hearing. Finally, I really wanted to end with what is this all for, right? Like, what is the ultimate purpose of not only RFK Jr., you know, again, kind of like overriding the American division of powers and, you know, separating, you know, what people's scientific abilities are to institute their belief on these institutions, but also about how there was like a health group, a health segment of folks that were formerly in the Democratic Party. These were kind of like health types that were anti-vaccine themselves, but were still voting for Democrats. But in the last couple of years, they are voting for Republicans, largely over this issue. And a senior White House aide told Politico that they actually want to prevent people from leaving the White House, not only to like keep some kind of segment of stability and show people, but it's important to keep people who believe in the Robert Kennedy agenda in order to hold power into the midterm. Midterm success in a large way depends on the Make America Healthy Again success. Everyone needs to deliver for these new, they call them Make America Healthy Again voters. I'm going to call them anti-vaccine voters. Everyone needs to deliver for these anti-vaccine voters because it's a new coalition. They skew younger, more female than the traditional Republican base. And you can actually close the gender gap and maintain the margins that Trump got with young people. And that's ultimately what this is all about, right? It is not about good policy. It is not about making sure that, you know, kids can be born to, you know, healthy people, that ultimately we're doing stuff that are good for society, but just so that they can survive a bad midterm year. And we're all going to pay for it. People who are in these low vaccinated areas are going to pay for it. You know, young babies who are susceptible to getting these illnesses are going to pay for it. And I think that is why not only do we need to go vote differently, you know, but I think that helps us, that should keep us motivated to go make a difference in our own local areas so that other people know that they need to vote differently as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. Since we are coming to a closing, since we had such a heavy, heavy lot of discussion tonight, I thought we should end on something light and funny as we get ready to exit. So I'm going to ask three statements. And each one, I want you guys to determine, did the politician actually say it? Okay? So, all right. And it's true or false, things like that. All right. So the first quote is, it goes, "I love California. I practically grew up in Phoenix." Did the politician actually say that? True or false? Where are you going? What do y'all think?
True.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of trust in them.
I think it's false.
False? All right. The answer is true. Actually, this was the vice president.
I thought, I was like, wait a second. This sounds too familiar.
Dan Quayle, something like that. He was the VP underneath Bush. Yes, he literally said, "I love California. I practically grew up in Phoenix." Like, y'all.
That should have been SNL skit instead of like Sarah. I can see Russia from my house.
Right? That is wild.
That would have done bars. Like, that would have numbered.
JD Vance saying it.
Second quote. Sorry. "If we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure." True or false? Did a politician actually say that?
Probably had to come from the South.
Y'all are getting hit to the game.
All right.
No, I believe that.
Yeah, I think it's true.
It is true.
Sorry, I believe they said that.
I
don't want to get clipped out of context. I believe he said that. Okay.
He did. He said, "If we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure." Okay. Pay attention, y'all. These are people in power. Right. Okay. All right. Last question. Hopefully I stomp you guys.
Wait.
Some of y'all are on the roll.
Was it said or no?
Yeah, who said that?
Oh, the VP. Yeah, the same guy, Dan Quayle. I'm probably saying his last name
wrong. Dan Quayle saying all this crazy stuff?
Yes, came out of his mouth.
Oh, boy.
All right, last one. True or false?
This is where people are like, "The Bush administration was someone," and I was like, "Oh, y'all went through a Bush Trumpism to it, you know?"
All right, last statement. True or false? Windmills cause cancer.
Oh, true.
That's also true. Probably said.
That windmills cause cancer. But yeah.
Yes, actually,
they definitely don't cause
good old
cancer.
Donald Trump said that one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the president, not the VP. You know, he's the actual president. He said that. Windmills cause cancer. Oh my gosh. Same guy who was at McDonald's flipping burgers. Okay.
I think we could do a whole episode on stuff that Donald Trump has said that is like real or not real, you know?
Yeah. Do y'all follow a girl on TikTok that's like, Donald Trump is just a teenage girl and like does it in her room where she's like sitting there mimicking. It's so funny. If that's the one thing y'all go watch from this, it'll give you it'll give you a good laugh.
Did Justin see they're like, oh, sorry. Zoran Mamdani went on I'm so sorry. He went on this podcast, the lawyer lady podcast, and they were like, was this a headline real or no? And he really couldn't tell. Very similar ones that were, you know, absurd stories.
So, if we learned anything, we have learned that politics isn't always serious. Sometimes it is just seriously ridiculous, okay? But I want to thank you guys for tuning in to, again, the 10th episode of Politically Speaking. Woohoo! There should be many more to come. I definitely want to give a special shout out to our lovely special guests, guests and co-hosts, Michael and Anderson. Thank you guys for joining and taking time, you know, to kick it with us, talk it up, chat it up, you know. But until next time, keep it politically speaking. See you guys.
This is Kirsten Pruitt. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find podcasts and consider leaving us a rating. You can find links to our social media and YouTube page in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.